as the pastor of Next here on our Bible study program. Telephone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's say good morning and welcome to our good friend from the frozen north. That will be Pastor Richard Moore, pastor at St. Mark and Lutheran Church in Winona, Minnesota. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Are you above zero?
No.
No.
It was -8 this morning when I drove in, and we are still at -2.
Ah, but it's getting warmer.
Absolutely. We're having a heat wave.
When will spring arrive in Winona, Minnesota?
That all depends on the year. The first year I was here, spring was here in March. The second year I was here, spring was here in late February. This year they're predicting May.
Ah.
So we'll see.
So you keep your snow boots out a little bit longer than the rest of us.
Yeah, you do whatever you have to.
I would like to ask you a question as the Super Bowl approaches here. The Super Bowl carries with it all kinds of different storylines, all different kinds of fascinating things. But this year, in an unavoidable way, since Kurt Warner, the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, is one of the prominent figures in the Super Bowl, we're dealing with the Jesus factor again. I don't know if you're much of an NFL fan. Do you follow the NFL, Pastor?
Not particularly, but I am aware of the Kurt Warner thing and how that's all going. So
today, well, not today, when the Arizona Cardinals defeated the Philadelphia Eagles to win the National Football Conference Championship, and, of course, television has to bring the winning quarterback in after the game, they get Kurt Warner on the stand, and they ask him kind of a football-type related question. He says, well, first, you know, I got to do it. You know, I got to say it. But I got to give credit to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm paraphrasing a little bit there. It's not a direct quote. But he felt some need, and I don't blame him, by the way, to put a couple of disclaimers on it, as if, get ready, brace yourself. You people out there, you know, who can't quite handle this open testimony of belief in Jesus Christ. And so he gave us a chance to get our feet on the ground, and then he gave credit to the Lord. Do you have any perspective on this phenomenon? Today, I heard a recorded comment from Ben Roethlisberger. Poor Ben. He's the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he too was citing the Lord. I almost felt sorry for him because he sounded almost as if, well, I know that I'm the backup quarterback when it comes to quarterbacking for Jesus here. Kurt's got that cornered, but he wanted to acknowledge that where he is today is a blessing from the Lord. Now, are you saying, right on. It's good to see some prominent people like this come right out and be open with their faith, and I like it. Or are you more inclined to say, you know, it's the NFL, it's a football game, just keep Jesus out of the thing, play the game, and get it over with? Which of those two more approximates Richard Moore?
The first one. Though I really wish we would not apologize for it or make it the only thing that people recall us doing. You know, you don't want to present your faith in such a way that people can dismiss you as a Jesus freak. Okay? And I think Kurt sometimes manages that. But if that is, in fact, his sentiments and the way he feels and the way he talks and the way he is, okay. I think for us to say, I will not speak of my faith at work, I will not speak of my faith in a public forum, I will not speak of my faith if I'm an elected officer, in an elective office, I will not speak of my faith if I'm MBA or NFL, is to say I'm ashamed of my faith. I don't think he should apologize for it. I think he should just come right out and say what he wants to say.
Well, I don't know that I disagree with that, but I think I know what he was trying to do. It wouldn't surprise me, and I don't know. I just don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me if some people in the television network somewhere along the way might have said to Kurt, you know, would you do us a favor? Can you just skip the Jesus thing this time? I mean, can you avoid doing that? Maybe he's been asked indirectly or directly to stop doing that.
Probably.
And maybe that's his way of saying, you know, I know what you've asked me to do, but I'm going to do it anyway, in a, as a kind of a courtesy. But then I'm just speculating.
It would not surprise me at all if what you just said is exactly what happened. But you know something? When we have Muslims on TV and they reference Allah, no one tells them they can't.
Why
we
is that?
We have a funny thing in America called freedom of speech. And freedom of speech means everyone has free speech.
Well, maybe,
we
maybe
not.
We
also have freedom of religion, which means everyone has the freedom to express their religious opinion. They don't have the freedom to enforce it on other people. But by definition, we have the right to say, in the public square, I believe this with all of my heart, and I want to acknowledge that belief before we do this, whatever it is.
Now, you, I think, told me one time here on our Ask the Pastor program that you have a daughter who plays volleyball.
Yes, I do.
And shock of shocks, you told me that you've actually officiated volleyball.
Yes, I do.
I am still trying to assemble in my mind the picture of Pastor Richard Moore in his officiating shirt standing up there.
Well, it's black pants and a white shirt.
Yeah.
A whistle.
Yeah.
In my back pocket is my red and my yellow card. And,
now, you've never used those, have you?
Once.
One time.
Mm-hmm. It solved it.
So you preached the law on that day?
The law of volleyball, yes.
Well, you know, I don't know why. That's just a hard image for me to form, but it does mean that you know what it's like, both as a parent of a daughter who plays and as a person who does officiating. You know what that competitive environment is like.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking for your opinion on this story. Perhaps you saw this. This is from the Associated Press out of Dallas. It says the coach of a Texas high school basketball team that beat another team 100-0 was fired on Sunday, the same day he sent an email to a newspaper saying he will not apologize, quote, for a wide margin victory when my girls played with honor and integrity, unquote. Kyle Queel, the headmaster for Covenant School, said in the Dallas Morning News online edition that he could not answer if the firing was a direct result of Coach Micah Grimes' email disagreeing with administrators who called the blowout shameful. Queel did not immediately answer phone messages or email from the Associated Press. On its website last week, Covenant, a private Christian school, posted a statement regretting the outcome of its January 13th shutout win over Dallas Academy. Quote, "It is shameful and an embarrassment that this happened. This clearly does not reflect a Christ-like and honorable approach to competition," unquote. The statement was signed by Queel and board chair Todd Dozier. Grimes, the coach who has been criticized for letting the game get so far out of hand, made it clear in the email Sunday to the newspaper that he does not agree with his school's assessment. Quote, "In response to the statement posted on the Covenant School website, I do not agree with the apology or the notion that the Covenant School girls basketball team should feel embarrassed or ashamed. We played the game as it was meant to be played. My values and my beliefs would not allow me to run up the score on any opponent, and it will not allow me to apologize for a wide margin victory when my girls played with honor and integrity," unquote. So I have two questions for you, Pastor. And
what was the score again?
100-0.
And he doesn't think that's running up the score?
I read you the quote.
Okay, just thought I'd ask.
I have two questions for you, Pastor. Let's start with the Pastor Richard Moore official.
Okay.
Now, I know, I guess you don't officiate basketball.
No, but I do officiate volleyball.
But you understand this context. Do you have a sportsman's or an official's perspective on this game, 100-0?
No one is benefited by it. Yeah. I think the coach was absolutely incorrect. Now, I'm making a bunch of assumptions, okay? But here are the assumptions I'm making. I'm assuming he left his first team in through the whole game, even though the other team didn't score. Otherwise, I don't think he would have gotten to 100 points. Let's say, hey, when it's 50 to nothing, put in your B team. Let them have experience. If the other team scores, you're not going to lose the game, and it allows the other team to actually play, not just be run down. Most officials, most coaches I know, most directors of athletics I know would agree with that, because in addition to being a competition, there's supposed to be some learning and some experience that goes on in elementary and high school sports that is more than just win at all cost and get the best score you possibly can. When you have already shown that you are superior in all ways to your opponent, unless he only had five girls on his basketball team, put in the next five. And if they are still running all over the team, put in your third group of five. Those girls normally never get to play at all. Let your own team have the experience of actually playing in a game.
Well, that seems like a nice thing to do. However, this coach was able to finish the 100-0 victory and call that honor and integrity. My girls played with honor and integrity.
I'm sure they did.
Are you
saying they didn't coach with it?
Are you saying that the coach was not honorable or did not coach with integrity?
Yes. Okay. I've coached in I've reffed in Missouri and Minnesota. Okay. Within the rules of the game, there is the suggestion made, for instance, that when a ref calls a foul on someone, when a ref has to yellow card someone, when a ref has to, that he explain in detail to the person what they did wrong so that they can learn from it and so that they can be a better player as a result. This coaches, I'm assuming, first team, went out and in two halves of this basketball game just blew the other team off the face of the earth. Did that help them learn skills? No, because they didn't have anyone who was capable of playing against them on the court, apparently. Did it help them in any way as a team? No. It won't even help them for their next game, because they're going to go into their next game believing that they can get 100-0 against anybody, because we're just so much better than the rest of the world. And the truth of the matter is the next team may hammer them.
Well, a parent who attended the game reportedly said that the Covenant players continue to shoot and make three-pointers even in the fourth quarter. It was 59-0 at halftime, by the way. She praised the Covenant players, but said spectators and an assistant coach were cheering wildly as their team edged closer to 100 points. So apparently somebody thought this was great.
Yeah, and there are people who think it's good to get together and bully the little kid, too. That's how you end up with four bullies against one little kid who can't protect himself. You just saw it on the field. When people lose perspective of the purpose of sport, the purpose of sport in school is not merely to win at all cost. And it certainly is not merely to humiliate your opponent. Well, you know, 75-0 would have been humbling enough, don't you think?
I think that just about everybody who is listening to us today would agree with you. And it's hard to imagine that anybody listening to us would say, I got no problem with it. If I'd have been coaching that game, I'd have been going for 110-0 if it had been within my reach. I doubt that anybody listening to us would say that. But that is a conclusion that I think you can come to whether you're a Christian or not.
Right.
Now, the website, the Covenant website, Covenant is the Christian school, private Christian school.
From which the kids who got 100 points come.
That's right.
Okay.
On the website, the school posted a statement regretting the outcome of the win over Dallas Academy and said this: it is shameful and an embarrassment that this happened. This clearly does not reflect a Christ-like and honorable approach to competition. Now, this is a different thing. we can all, I think, agree that humiliating an opponent is not a very sportsmanlike behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But is it unchristlike? Does the does the Bible have anything to say about this?
Yes.
Really?
Absolutely.
When you referee volleyball, do you referee from the Bible?
No, I referee from the rule book. But let's just start with, does the Bible have anything to say with that aspect of our life? The Bible has something to say with every aspect of our life. You don't shut off, I'm a Christian, because you happen to have entered the basketball court. Do you?
Apparently, you do if you go to if you coach the Covenant basketball team down there in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. But no. You know, this is the whole problem we have right now in Christianity in America.
That's quite a... What did you say? This is the whole problem that we have?
In Christianity in America.
Well, this is going to be good. I can't wait to hear this.
You ready?
I am.
I am a Christian on Sunday, and I am a Christian in the Christian settings. But in the rest of the world, my Christianity doesn't affect it. I can cheat on my taxes and be a Christian. I can cheat on my wife and be a Christian. I can run over and try to completely eliminate and humiliate those people who I'm in competition with at work and be a Christian. No, I can't. Jesus didn't say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, except when you're on the basketball court, at work, or really want to do something. Did he?
He did not.
No. The coach is nuts. I think the coach was fired. Bravo. I think the coach should have been fired if he worked for a public school.
So when the administration and the board, the governing board of Covenant High School, tried to motivate the coach to apologize, he said he would not. He said his girls played with honor and integrity. And they did. And so he would not.
The girls played with honor and integrity.
How do you...
I would say that. No one said that when they watched the girls were taunting the other team. They were just doing what their coach told them to do. Play to the best of your ability and make every shot you can. That's what every coach tells their kids to do. But when you're ahead 59-0 at the half, sit your starters.
So how do you think this coach should have responded?
First of all, when he was ahead 59-0 at the half, his starter shouldn't have played anymore. Unless, let's say, the other team came within 30 points. Okay?
Yeah.
When the administration says, we consider this a disgrace, he should have stepped forward and said, the girls did nothing disgraceful. I made a poor judgment in leaving the starting team in and allowing the score to get this out of whack. You know, Joe Paterno has this problem with college football.
Really?
Yeah. He will not run up the score. He will not do it. He has never done it in 40-some-odd years as a head coach. Because he will not run up the score, when they put his team's work into their computer program, they don't get ranked as high because they talk about the spread.
Oh, so you're saying Joe Paterno was a good guy.
Yeah. But he feels that if you are ahead by an insurmountable margin, you should put in your second string team so they get experience, and because there's nothing to be gained by humiliating the other team. Beat them. Beat them soundly. Beat them by 2 touchdowns.
The coach is quoted as saying, we played the game as it was meant to be played. My values and my beliefs would not allow me to run up the score on any opponent, and it will not allow me to apologize for a wide margin victory when my girls played with honor and integrity. Now,
That's disingenuous.
As a kind of an amusing side note here, I think this guy is qualified to be governor of Illinois. But having said that...
But it's disingenuous. You cannot say, I would not run up a large margin.
Yes,
and have
can.
The margin he be just, 100.
He just did.
Right. And have the margin be 100.
What do you make of that? The fact that after winning a game 100-0, he says, my values and my beliefs would not allow me to run up the score on any opponent. I guess.
I would not have him.
Uh-oh. disconnect. All right. I was so looking forward to hearing the answer to that question. So we're going to have to do a little bit of a reconnect here on our Bible study program. We will attempt to reconnect with Pastor Moore and reestablish our conversation here as soon as we possibly can. Let's listen to this in the meantime.
You want your children to earn good grades. Shouldn't you expect the same from your school? St. Louis Metro Lutheran Schools have earned straight A's, affordability, academics, athletics, and accessible teachers dedicated to your child's success. All A's, plus a caring, Christian learning environment for children of all ages. St. Louis Metro Lutheran Schools are also convenient with 41 area locations. To see for yourself how area Lutheran schools are making the grade, join us for our open house at any Lutheran school, Sunday, February 8th from 1 to 3 p.m. That's Sunday, February 8th from 1 to 3 p.m. at any Lutheran school. For a complete list of schools, more information, or to learn about financial assistance available, visit us online at metrolutheranschools.org. That's metrolutheranschools.org.
So,
all right, Diane Summers has come to my rescue. We are attempting to recontact with Pastor Richard Moore. You're listening to Ask the Pastor. I'm Chuck Rathard. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join us. I'm kind of curious as to what our listeners think about this. This is the kind of subject that I think maybe fits into the category of why we have our fine Ask the Pastor program here and... why are we talking about girls' basketball games? He's on line one. All right, let me just see if I can connect him up here.
What I'm saying, you don't.
Oh, there he is. He's back. Okay. And, you know, pretty soon we're going to have to go to break. So next time, try to drop out just right before the break if you can.
Yeah, but I don't know where. I don't know how this happened.
Well,
but anyway,
I'll tell you how it happened. There's bad weather all over the place, and that has affected a lot of things between you and me when it comes to wires, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
But anyway, you were interrupted.
I believe the coach is disingenuous. In other words, he's lying. Okay? There is absolutely no way running having a score of 100-0 is not running up a score.
You would think so.
If I walk over and ask my high school AD in the next building whether or not 100-0 would represent running up a score, he would explode. Okay?
All right.
And in a Christian academy?
When we come back on the other side of the break here, what I'd like you to do is answer this question. So as a person with a decent approach to sportsmanship and a Christ-like attitude because you're a pastor, if you had been officiating that game, would you have said something to the coach as he ran the score up to 100-0? Don't answer it yet. Other side of the break. We're talking with Pastor Richard Moore, at least most of the time. And we'll be right back.
Bernard owes Wooten a favor.
Oh, I knew I should have sent a thank you card.
But it's a favor that puts him face to face with the Bassett family.
Oh, and that's my brother Wellington.
It puts Bernard in the middle of a family feud.
You can sell tickets for this. Oh, mercy.
On the next Adventures in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. You didn't see it coming. The guy you married, fun, charming, morphed into the guy snoring who forgets your birthday and is so boring. You could do better. Or could you? If you're emotionally attracted to any man other than your husband, it's time you meet Paula Fredrickson, who learned the hard way the man you always wanted is the one you already have. Hear about the potential in your marriage next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
There's something our country's high school science teachers aren't teaching our kids, and it's next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
We often hear today that no true scientists are creationists because science disproves creation. Truth is, most of the founders of the various disciplines of modern science were creationists, as are a great many scientists today. One of the most famous scientists of all time was Robert Boyle. Boyle, who lived at the close of the 17th century, did pioneering work both in chemistry and physics. Perhaps you are familiar with Boyle's law, which relates the pressure, temperature, and volume of a gas. Boyle's law is studied by every high school student today. Boyle was also a completely dedicated Christian. He contributed a great deal of his money to the work of translating the Bible into languages which did not yet have the Bible. Boyle was also very concerned about those who, in his own day, thought that science could prove that the Bible is wrong. These people were the forerunners of modern evolutionists. In order to combat this idea in science, Boyle, with others, founded the Royal Society of London as one of the earliest modern creationist organisations. He also funded the famous Boyle Lectures in his will, stipulating that these lectures were to offer scientific viewpoints which upheld the truth of the Bible. Boyle called science a religious task, which has the job of learning more about the workmanship of the Creator.
To get a complete set of transcripts from Creation Moments programs, ask about the book Letting God Create Your Day when you visit us online at creationmoments.com or give us a call at 1-800-42-BIBLE, 1-800-422-4253. And join us again for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. Here's a recipe for your Sunday afternoon as you go about your way enjoying the day. Just be sure to stay tuned to AM 850 KFUO for great Christ-centered music, along with practical thoughts and some of my own real-life experiences blended in as well, all designed to help you keep Christ in your mind. Join me, won't you? That's Jubilation every Sunday afternoon from 1 to 4 p.m. right here on AM 850 KFUO.
How would you like an opportunity to work with congregation members to equip them to express their faith comfortably in daily conversation, establish effective outreach ministry goals, welcome and include guests into the worship and life of the congregation, and plan effective evangelism events? Perhaps you'd like to join the 72 Partners on the Road. Visit the ministry's website at lcmsworldmission.org/the72. And apply now to serve the 72 on the road.
This is Ask the Pastor program. I'm Chuck Rathard. Pastor Richard Moore is with us here today. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We have a caller standing by. But, Pastor, before we go to that call, the question that I put to you before we went to the break is, you having experience as a sports official, you've got the striped shirt on, or in the case of volleyball, the white shirt on. And this behavior, which is running up the scores, seems to be sportsmanlike. Do you have an official's responsibility to communicate something to the coach, or is that outside the purview of the rules of volleyball or basketball?
Well, within the purview of the rules of volleyball and basketball, the one of the things that we are charged with is trying to maintain sportsmanlike conduct. I would use that as my rationale for going to the coach during halftime and saying, "Coach, I'm not telling you how to run your game." I really am, but I would say to him, "I'm not telling you how to run your game, but why don't you put in your second team? You are obviously going to win this game. The other team is not going to have a problem. If they start scoring or bringing the game close, you can always pull them out. But at this point, neither your girls nor their girls are benefiting from the experience." And I would say that to him. Can't make him do it, but I can say that to him.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Tina. You're on the Bible study.
How are you guys?
We're fine. How are you?
I'm doing terrific, thanks. You know, I differ with the coach. I think he should have been censored but not lost his job. I think that creating humility within the community, the Texas community, I think that's inappropriate. But since this is a girls' group, I really think that perhaps they could have, the Christian school could have looked at it the other way and said, why don't these girls take the other girls out and have a day of shopping and each one gets a free outfit on the other. And I think that that would really work well in that each time the girl picked up part of the new outfit, she'd remember that someone from the opposing team had purchased that for her.
Well, I will say one thing. I believe it is certainly implied in the story that we're dealing with today, if not stated, that the coach didn't lose his job because he ran up the score. The coach lost his job because he refused to apologize. He was instructed by his superiors to apologize.
I would go so far as to say he didn't lose his job because he even refused to apologize, but because he does not share their value system as to how they want coaching done at their school.
I would say you guys are short-sighted on that. I would say that he perhaps didn't have enough time to think about it. It was just a few days, and he was still in the defensive mood and not in the offensive mood.
I hate to say this, but having worked with a number of coaches, and I obviously don't know this man, but having worked with a number of coaches, the choice to run up a score like this is not something they have not thought about. It's not something they have not had to deal with before. It normally doesn't get that big. But it's not like, oh, it never occurred to me that this could be a problem for the other team. Have you ever seen a team lose by 20 or 30 or 40 points? If you have, you can't imagine the effect that losing by 100-0 would have on another girl's team. And there's nothing to be gained for your own students.
Sounds like Christians and the Romans. The Romans oppressed the Christians so badly.
Thank you, yeah. Tina. I may be short-sighted. I certainly am guilty of that from time to time. But it seems to me that his decision to publicize, he sent an email to the newspaper in which he said he will not apologize for doing this. Trying to put myself in the shoes of the administrator, I think that I'd have a big problem with that. And I think that that might be the thing that would push me over the edge. You know, we have a private disagreement or an internal disagreement about what constitutes sportsmanship. Coach, we think you crossed that line and that you need to apologize for it. And not only does he refuse to apologize, but he goes public in the newspaper and says that he will not apologize. That was pretty provocative, I would think.
I would think so, too.
But then that's just me, and I am known to be short-sighted. Now, we did have somebody call in who did not want to go on the radio, who said they did, if Diane took the call, and I'm relaying it as best as I can, does not approve of you and me, Pastor, taking this coach to task for this unsportsmanlike behavior. The conversation is unsettling, I guess, to hear Christians on the radio criticizing or condemning this man for this behavior, and doesn't think we should be talking about it. How do you feel?
Well, if we don't talk about those things that we believe Scripture very clearly shows as wrong, or a behavior that we don't believe should be done, then what are we doing? We are saying, gee, it's okay. You can do anything you want to and be a Christian. You really can't. You really can't. Part of the problem here, very simply, is that we have gotten to the point where any public criticism of anybody seems to be that in and of itself is wrong. You know, there are absolute rights and wrongs. There are God-given rights and wrongs. We are called upon by the Lord to acknowledge, call out, chastise when necessary one another. I think this is one of those things that needs to be talked about. When you first started off talking about a football team, I thought you were going to talk about the young man who died, whose coach has now been charged with murder. But that's a different story.
That is a different story. And apparently our caller, according to Diane, raised the question that, you know, what if somebody who is not a believer in Jesus, somebody who is an unbeliever, happens to tune into this program and they hear the Christians on the Christian radio station
disagreeing with another Christian?
Well, you know, taking another Christian to task, the coach of this team. Now, what kind of a message does that send to unbelievers who might tune in?
What the message it sends is that in a Christian community, we don't allow people to humiliate other people for no apparent reason. In a Christian community, we will not send our kids out to score 100-0 against another team that obviously is massively inferior to us, because there's something called Christian care and concern. I think a person who's a non-believer would say, wow, look at that. Christians actually apply this to their life. Maybe there's something worth doing there. Maybe the world would be better, and we wouldn't have people running all over each other if we all understood what Christians believe.
All right. I'm going to change the subject again. This is the headline on this story from Agoura Hills, California, is First FDA-approved human trials using embryonic stem cells a cause for alarm. The story says, while many researchers in California are rejoicing over the FDA's approval of human trials using embryonic stem cells, reputable scientists around the country are concerned that research on adult stem cells, the best hope for real cures, will be abandoned or overlooked. Of the three types of stem cell research, embryonic is by far the most costly, least useful, and most destructive, said Dr. Kathy McReynolds, Biola University professor, bioethicist, and director of public policy at the Christian Institute on Disability. Both adult stem cells taken from bone marrow and other tissue sources and neonatal stem cells from umbilical cord blood and the placenta have been used in treating over 100 diseases successfully and have many superior qualities to embryonic stem cells, nor do they require the destruction of human life. The CID has scores of examples where adult stem cells have been used to successfully treat patients who have been paralyzed, as well as those suffering from leukemia, lymphoma, inherited blood disorders, kidney cancer, diabetes, and even multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease. However, not one single researcher has tested a therapy using embryonic stem cells in a human patient, recognizing that the risk is too great. I understand that there are forces present in our culture that drive certain things in certain directions. But I have to tell you, Pastor, even this one fails me. If the assertions in this story are true, and everything I've heard confirms that they are, that is, adult stem cells have allowed us to make much more progress and hold much more promise than anything in an embryonic stem cell, which requires the destruction of a human embryo or a human being. Yet we have this enormous push to do embryonic stem cell research. And I just don't understand why. Do you?
Well, I can be cynical. I can give you what I think is a reason, but then I'll have to be chastised again for being unreasonable as a Christian. You see, what I believe is going on is that the push for this embryonic stem cell research comes more from a push to keep and to maintain and to justify and to rationalize the legalization of abortion than it does the actual hope of cure through embryonic stem cell.
So what is your logic on that?
My logic on that is if we come up with a way that using embryonic stem cells can make Christopher Reeves walk, people will then say, well, maybe aborting an unborn child, it's worth it if we can, in fact, help someone who's really suffering, who's already here and we know, and who's begging for help.
Well, from what I understand about embryonic stem cells, you have to harvest those from an embryo that's like 5 to 7 days old. It seems to me once you get a baby 6 months in utero, I don't know if
but aborting the argument is, how do you get the 5 to 7 day old fetus by abortion? Now there is a productive reason if embryonic stem cell research proves useful. Right?
Yeah.
Now we have a productive reason why an abortion's a good thing. And if this abortion is okay, then the next statement is, well, maybe we can figure out how to use the byproduct of an abortion of a six-month fetus because we were able to do it with this. The truth of the matter is, as from all the reading I've done, and this is one of those topics I have dealt with and studied a bit, is that adult stem cells are much more productive, that umbilical stem cells give them everything that they need to work with, okay, already. So you have to look for another reason why a person would keep pushing for this. Now, in the we are good Christians and should put the best construction on everything, you could take the position that says, well, maybe we just haven't come to the right scientific process by which fetal stem cells would prove to be more important than the other ones, and if we don't do the research, we never will. Okay? I've heard that argument.
Yeah.
But the research as we have it now, normally, if you go down a road a certain distance and it doesn't work, it's abandoned. We've gone down the road that distance. It hasn't worked, but they're still pushing for fetal stem cell research. To do the fetal stem cell research they're talking about, you have to kill a child that God has granted a soul. We shouldn't be doing it.
So now the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, has approved human trials using embryonic stem cells. So
yep.
We already have the embryonic stem cells because there were embryos created and frozen. There was a line of those. I don't know. Under the Bush administration, he allowed a certain number of those to be dealt with, but it was on the conservative side. He took heat from the pro-life people, and he took heat from the pro-abortion people on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we have some embryonic stem cells.
What we have is a new president. The new president has lifted the executive order that banned it and limited it, and has now said that he will not get involved in what scientists should decide. So though, in fact, his action has made this possible, which is why it's now happening, he has, quote, deniability, because he didn't create an order to make it happen. He just merely removed an order that kept it from happening.
So
I am all in favor of President Obama being successful. I am not in favor of any politician telling me that their action, which is the direct cause of something, isn't really their action. All I did was free it up for someone else to make the decision, when the only thing that had kept it from being made was a previous president's executive order.
So as a Christian, what is your duty? What is our duty?
My duty is to not participate. My duty is to let my elected officials know that I am opposed to this. My duty is to be active and vote so that those who support this are not reelected. My duty is to not participate. And I'm going to take it to this far. If I become paralyzed by falling or something, and they say to me, by using embryonic stem cells, we can fix you, I will say, I won't be part of that. I won't contribute to the need to kill unborn children.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Leo, you're on the Bible study.
Good morning, gentlemen. I had two things I just wanted to bring up quickly, if you don't mind.
Right ahead.
I wanted to make a suggestion relative to the issue you're discussing right now about the governance of this nation. I wondered if it would be a possibility for our clergy in the Synod to make a very serious attempt to enumerate in one column what we consider to be attributes of being a Christian, and then to take a look at individuals who are empowered right now by our recent election to see how they measure up. For example, Was the individual baptized? Did the individual ascribe to the doctrine of the Trinity, et cetera, et cetera? You know what I mean?
Why
right
is it? Why would that be my job and not yours?
Beg pardon?
Why would that be my job and not yours?
Well, I think it ought to be our mutual job, and I've suggested this to the clergy at my church at Reformation Lutheran in St. Louis, and I don't think you ought to duck the issue.
Well, I'm not ducking the issue. What I'm suggesting is that we, in fact,
this coaching thing. Over 50 years ago, I was with a school district in suburban Chicago, districts 58 and 99 in Downers Grove, Illinois, which was the population of that area included scientists at the Argonne National Laboratory there. One of our teacher workshops one time had a presentation, you know, in one of these preschool workshops by several behavioral individuals who came in and said, you know, you fellows and teachers want to remember that these youngsters we have in our classroom have an emotional aspect to their behavior, too. And especially at the junior high and senior high level where they're growing through a developmental period in so many ways, make sure that we don't have sadistic individuals running our coaching enterprise, or we don't have teachers who are so immature that they regard every kid in the classroom to be their deadly enemy. We need mature individuals sensitive to these needs. And I think we might want to go back sometime and take a look at that as we employ individuals in our schools. And I'm talking about private as well as public, you know. I've been in both domains, and I'd just like to hear your thoughts about it, and I do greatly enjoy your contributions, both you, the pastor, and Chuck. You're doing a great job. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. Pastor?
Okay. On his second point, he is singing to the choir. I absolutely agree with him, and I think that's the problem that we were discussing earlier, is that this man, you know, I don't know what he had in mind, but it wasn't the well-being of either his kids or the other team. To allow your kids, and in essence running up 100-0 score is in fact to allow your team to bully the other team. That's not healthy for them. When it comes to the question of could we make a list as to what's Christian and what's not and apply it to candidates, before the election, I talked at length with my adult Bible class, and I preached on what it is our responsibility as a Christian is. And what I told them, and what I believe to be the case, is that each of us individually has a responsibility to weigh what we know about the individuals who are running against what we believe the Lord would have us do, and whether or not they are part of the body of Christ, and then decide who we're going to vote for. The truth of the matter is, I can't make you a checklist that if you go down and check this off, you will guarantee that you have elected the best person. Nor would I tell you who to elect. But I can tell you that when we act as though who we elect has nothing to do with our Christianity, back to the major problem we have in society today as Christians, that's when we get ourselves in trouble. You know, you can argue whether Barack Obama was the best person to elect or not, right up until now. Because now, when you look at Romans, we are told that those who are in authority have that authority because God has given it to them. Now, God allows us to be part of the process, and if we weren't part of the process and we don't like what happened, then, you know, whose fault is that?
All right, let's see if we can squeeze a couple more phone calls in here before we run out of time. Brian, you're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Hi. I have a friend who has said recently, he's a good Lutheran, and he said that he enjoys his Bible study more than his prayer life because he feels like his prayers are inadequate. What kind of, do you think he's making a mistake saying that, or how do you think his where his mind's at?
All right, we'll talk about it.
Thanks.
Pastor?
I think he's not alone in saying that. There are an awful lot of Christians who feel that prayer needs to be some sort of special thing, needs to use certain words, needs to be done in a certain way. And when I look at prayer in the Bible, I find myself seeing prayer as communicating with God. We're to talk to God, take to him our concerns, share with him our trials and our joys as we would our best friend. I don't know how you can have, quote, inadequate prayer if you are talking from your heart to your Lord. But I don't think we do a very good job, especially us as Lutherans, of teaching prayer, of teaching what prayer is, and of allowing people to recognize that you don't have to have a 4-year master's in theology to say grace at dinner, that you do not have to have these and thous and all of that type of language in your prayers, that prayer is calling upon God, your Father, your friend, your Savior, and sharing with them how you feel. And part of the problem is that the majority of examples of prayer that we give to people are prayers at the altar, okay? And the prayers at the altar tend to be far more formal than the prayers I have in my office. In my office, I do not say things like, "Oh Lord, we know that you are the great physician of body and spirit." He knows that. When I'm leading a prayer of the congregation, it is both to teach and to pray. And so we need to help people recognize that God isn't up there grading their grammar. He's listening to their heart and to their words, and he promises to hear them. In the parable of the unjust judge, Jesus clearly teaches that we're to be persistent in our prayers, even, if you will, nagging God about the problems we have.
One more call here before we run out of time. Hi, Jody, you're on the Bible study.
Hi, Pastor. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was wanting to talk to you a little bit about, you were talking about elected officials, and I was just wondering, you know, some of our elected officials are pro-death and some are pro-life, and I was just wondering, in voting for our elected officials, one thing that comes to mind is, you know, didn't Pontius Pilate try to wash his hands of the responsibility of killing Jesus?
Yes, he did.
By not making a decision, but letting the people choose for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, you know, if you could share your thoughts about how our elected officials might, how we are responsible also for the elected officials that we choose.
Pastor Moore, we don't have hardly any time. Thank you, Jody. We're running very short on time. Can you be brief?
Well, Jody, I guess what I would say is that you are right in the fact that we are responsible because God has put us in a nation where we have the right to participate. We are responsible to the Lord for the decisions we make in elections. Individually responsible. And so the Christian who says, "I will not be part of the process because all government is corrupt," is merely abdicating the responsibility the Lord has given him. We're to be the salt and light of the world. You can't be the salt and light if you're not willing to get off the shelf.
Pastor, thank you so much. Pastor Richard Moore, pastor at St. Martin Lutheran Church in Winona, Minnesota. Tomorrow we begin a study of the book of Judges. Pastor Thomas Eckstein will do an intro to the book, and our Ask the Pastor guest will be Pastor Ken Wagner. Thanks for the listening, and thanks for the calling.
Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.